joke that I probably shouldn't, but those of you who know me won't be surprised. So two British sailors were stumbling through the London fog on leave one night, and they had had a little bit too much port at the local pub. And they were a little dazed and confused, and through the fog comes another man that they didn't recognize, and they were just kind of drunkenly rude to him and obnoxious, and they didn't realize that he was their admiral. And he was offended at how they were treating him, and he said, "Men, do you know who I am?" And one of them looked at the other and said, "I thought we were drunk. This guy doesn't even know who he is." So this class is, who are we? And we're not insinuating that we're so drunk that we've lost track. But we want to spend some time talking about the history, the tradition, and the practice of the American Presbyterian Church, particularly in its manifestation as the Presbyterian Church in America. And so today is just kind of a rationale for why we would offer this class. I mean, we are a PCA church. Shouldn't we know what a PCA church is and what a PCA church believes and why it does the things it does? And yes, we should, but I'm not sure that we always do. Now, there are a number of reasons for that. Part of that is our identity began not in the PCA, but in the OPC, another P. There's lots of P's in the Presbyterian world. The Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And then we transitioned towards the end of Pastor Mladen's time here into the Presbyterian Church in America. Shortly after that, Pastor Mladen retired. And then we spent a long season not really as engaged and involved in and interacting with our presbytery as we could have during that era. And so this has led us to some idiosyncratic realities at New Life. This has led us to not always grasping what our role and relationship is. Plus, on top of that, we are situated in one of the best places on earth, Southern California, which has its very own church culture and dynamic, which has been shaped in the 20th century, especially the latter part of the 20th century, primarily by a group of churches known as, very good, a couple of people in the front row knew it, Calvary Chapel. And every other church is either operating in light of or in response to Calvary Chapel, because it was big, is big, still is big. Calvary Chapel, which is, I think doctrinally, they are not Calvinistic. In fact, they are very anti-Calvinistic, as much as Emily and I have dear friends who are pastors and other leaders in the Calvary Chapel churches. They do not agree on that point of doctrine. In fact, the day that Chuck Smith passed away, I texted some good friends of mine that I podcast with, and I said, "Did you guys hear that Chuck Smith just became a Calvinist?" And one of them said, "Too soon, Joel. Too soon." So, but I appreciate Chuck Smith for a number of things, especially his commitment to God's word in counseling. But the Calvary Chapel churches don't believe as we do about how salvation works. They don't believe as we do about how the church should be structured, the authority of pastors, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of things, but that church culture is predominant in Southern California. So, why is this type of course appropriate and necessary? Well, we're wanting to ask questions like, what makes us Presbyterian? Are we Presbyterian just because we believe in TULIP? or because we even say we believe the confession of faith and the catechisms? Is that what makes us Presbyterian? What makes us different than other church communities in San Diego? And again, we're not saying better. We're saying different. Okay? We want to look at the precursors to our Presbyterian context, to our current practice, and we'll get to know ourselves better as a congregation of the South Coast Presbytery of the Presbyterian Church in America. And I would say we have a really fantastic presbytery. Being a guy who's newer to it, I love it, and I love the men in it, and very grateful to be a part of it. So, if we want to understand our church better, we have to understand where we have come from, the history, the tradition, the practice that has led us to our current context. So, how is our church different from others? How is it the same as other churches as well? Why does our church do specific things that other churches don't? And why do we not do things that other churches do? These are the types of questions that we'll be seeking to answer. And even things like, why do we have so many acronyms and funny names and titles for stuff? You know, so we're, you know, Presbyterians are famous for initializing everything. Living in D.C., I was well prepared for a life of Presbyterianism. All right. One example. Well, if we talk about the SCP, we're talking about the South Coast Presbytery, PCA. The what? The BCO. Who knows what the BCO is? I wish I had some candy I could throw out. We just got done doing Willy Wonka. You'd think I'd have plenty of candy around. What does BCO mean, Keith? Book of Church Order. So we'll probably even talk a little bit about what is the place of the Book of Church Order. Because there are times where people won't like what's going on, and they'll see it as outside of the Book of Church Order, and so they'll demand, we need to stick to the Book of Church Order. And then there'll be other times that they don't like what's going on, and it's happening exactly as the Book of Church Order says it is, and they'll say, why do we need to do what the Book of Church Order says? We can do what we want. You know, God's people have always done well when the meeting starts with, we can do what we want around here. That was a joke. You can laugh about it on Tuesday. All right. So the basic outline for this course, we're going to spend 4 weeks on the history of American Presbyterianism. Connor structured this course, so all the nerdly church history will be coming out, all right? I love that guy. All right. So 4 weeks on the history of American Presbyterianism and 4 weeks on church polity. So the first 4 weeks will cover 1 century a week from the 18th to the 21st century. So that's once Connor's back, you can start covering a century at a time. The second 4 weeks cover practical issues for our church today. And with the long history of Presbyterianism in America, part of which my family was, it's part of the reason my family came to America, was to help plant Presbyterianism here. We hope to cover the highlights of this long history, as well as the major movements and figures that lead us to where we are today as a church. So what can you hope to gain from a course like this? Connor's going to be offended at how quickly I'm working through our material here. Well, we want you to come away with a better understanding of Presbyterianism and the Reformed tradition. And why do we want that for you? Because both of those seek to be grounded in and built upon the Word of God. So, Connor's almost tired of me saying this around the office, but as a number of issues come up, I'll say, we'll get to that in the book of Acts. And one issue was, he's like, I'm not sure that person's going to be around because they have a limited time here in San Diego, not because they're going to be deceased. I'm not sure that person's going to be around when we get to that issue. And so he said, you know, seeing how long you can take to go through a book is quite a bit. So a better understanding of Presbyterian and Reformed tradition. Secondly, we want you to understand better how theology impacts practice. Because we believe what we believe, there are certain things that we must do in worship and in our practice and in our daily life together. And there are certain things that we mustn't do in worship and in our daily lives together. And what we want to help to do is give you the tools to sort through things that shouldn't be in either of those baskets. Okay? So sometimes people can look at what a church does and say, well, that's not Presbyterian because they have robes, or because they don't have robes, or because they have an organ, or because they don't have an organ, or whatever the situation might be. And so it's clear they think, well, because we're Presbyterian, that means XYZ. And so what we want to do is try to get more aligned together on our understanding of those things and how what we believe impacts what we do, why we do it. We want to cover the story of major figures, major seminaries. You've probably heard phrases like Old Princeton. So if you're familiar with Princeton Seminary today, you think, I'm not sure I'd want a pastor who came from Princeton Seminary. Well, up to 100 years ago, if you were a Presbyterian, you could not think of a better seminary for your pastor to come from than Princeton Seminary. What changed? What went different or wrong, as the case might be? And so if you understand that what happened at Princeton is what birthed Westminster Seminary, Faith Theological Seminary then, that eventually led to Westminster West, which is now Westminster Seminary, California, all those types of things, you understand better just how those things have developed over the years. Various denominations. So what separates out Scottish Presbyterians from American Presbyterians? What makes those two ideologies different? What's the difference between the PCUSA and all of the bodies that have come out of the PCUSA? Okay? Or are in just that North American Presbyterian context. How did my church come to be what it is? What makes new life in the context of the South Coast Presbytery, in the context of the PCA? But our particular history is, I would say, very particular, like all churches' histories can be. But Connor and I love to tell people we are the oldest confessionally reformed Presbyterian church in San Diego County. We're older than our presbytery. That's what happens when you change denominations, is you can end up with math like that. Okay? So we're very humble about that. We're not supposed to be proud, so I thought I'd say humble. Okay? How does our church relate to other churches in our area that are in the PCA? And how do we relate to other PCA churches in our nation? Does it matter what somebody's doing in the St. Louis area in relation to us? Now, we all know the California mentality that once you get into the desert, there is nothing worthwhile going on the other side of that, okay? It's just a big blur beyond that. But because we're Presbyterian, we can't say that, okay? Because we are organically connected to churches all across the United States and all over the world. So that's what happens in our region at Presbytery, and that's what happens nationally as we go, say, this summer to General Assembly, as we'll have probably around 2,500 pastors and elders gathered in Memphis for barbecue and the occasional church meeting. We'll be there for church meetings, but trust me, we will fit in some barbecue as well. So, and how does this all differ from other churches, other denominations? Perhaps some of you grew up in independent churches, and they were very fierce about their independence. I grew up in a church, my dad's church, that had split off a congregation in a liberalizing denomination. And so that congregation, for good or ill, will never join a denomination, because what's in the water there is denominations are bad. Let me tell you, bad denominations are bad. Good denominations are good. And the best denomination is the PCA. So, all right. So we'll be wanting to solicit from you, and we'll set up the means to do this. You know, what questions do you have about Presbyterianism? And so be thinking of that in the coming week. Because Connor and I keep saying, we don't want to be answering questions that nobody's asking. We do that enough, we feel like. So we want to make sure that you are asking, you know, that we're addressing things that are actual questions in your heart and mind about who we are and why we do what we do. So be thinking about that, and then by next Sunday we'll have those mechanisms in place to ask those questions. So where will we be going in the first couple of weeks here? We'll be asking, what does early Presbyterianism look like in the New World when it's strictly a mission endeavor? Okay, as it comes, it's planted in places like Jamaica, New York, in places like that, and as it starts to spread and materialize. How is early Presbyterianism practiced in North America around the formation of the United States? There were some founding fathers who were Presbyterian. There were some who were congregational. There were some who were Unitarian. There were all kinds of religious ideals in the group of the founding fathers. So, some things that, a few books that might be helpful to you. One is by Daryl Hart and John Muther, Seeking a Better Country, 300 Years of American Presbyterianism. Another that's two more that are specifically PCA specific. One is by Sean Michael Lucas, For a Continuing Church. And he walks through the history of the PCA. He doesn't pull any punches. He deals with the good, bad, and the ugly. And there was some great issues of racism and all sorts of things early on in the PCA. And that type of stuff is addressed. And our General Assembly has addressed that, publicly repented of those types of sins. And then another is by a man who was a comrade of mine in the RPCNA, but was actually the first, I think, student under care and licentiate of the PCA back in the 70s, Frank Smith, The History of the Presbyterian Church in America. And Frank is very particular and very thorough. And he is, I've told him this, so I'm not telling stories out of school. He is one of the whitest people you would ever want to meet. He is so just particular and finessed in things, and God has called him to urban Atlanta to minister in an area where there were some times when the church that they were meeting in was locked, and so they'd sit on the front steps with needles and all sorts of stuff from that neighborhood, drive-by shootings all the time, and he's poured his heart out into that community, and it's really amazing. Part of his doctoral work was on writing this very thorough history of the PCA. So those are a few resources: Seeking a Better Country, For a Continuing Church, and the History of the Presbyterian Church in America. So as you hear talk about the PCA, you'll hear things, phrases like a big tent. And part of that is because the founders of the PCA had a vision to be the continuing mainline denomination of Presbyterianism in America. They did not want to be a sectarian, micro, you know, they wanted orthodoxy to be proclaimed. They wanted the confession and the catechisms to be held to, which they are. But they did not want to be just some fledgling little group. They had a vision to be a force for good in our nation as a mainline evangelical reformed denomination. And so there is a certain broadness to the PCA. That broadness is uncomfortable for some. And if that's uncomfortable, there's also a certain narrowness to the PCA. And that narrowness is uncomfortable for some. They wish we were not quite as fundamental or conservative in many of our views. But by the grace of God, we are what we are, and God has built us up and kept us. Terry. That's okay. I am horrible with statistics. As I often say, I'm good with math 95% of the time. The other 3%, I'm not very good. And we've just been talking about that this week because our stated clerk, you might have heard the PCUSA just dropped all of their numbers, which some even say are lagging behind how quickly the PCUSA is tanking, because they report, I think, 2 years out from the actual statistics they've received, I think is how they do it. And so our stated clerk heading into our 50th anniversary, which is this summer in Memphis, is working very diligently. I think we have 88 presbyteries and trying to get from each of the presbytery clerks all of the statistics from all of the churches. So right now, I cannot answer that, but now I know that's a question I need to be able to answer for this class to be effective. Oh my goodness. How large is the PCA? Anybody have Google? Because that's what I'm going to have to do. You're looking it up? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say maybe 800,000, so I was way off. 1.1 active members. And hopefully 10 to 15 more in a couple weeks, few weeks, so. Of in America? Is that like in our nation? I don't know. Who can Google that? Who knows the equation to put in? How many Protestants are there in America? Because that's a very broad category. A lot of people don't, a lot of Protestants don't even know they're protesting anything. They've totally lost track of that. USA is 1.1. Okay. So maybe I wasn't so far off with a smaller number. Now, okay, so the PCUSA is 1.1 million, I think is the number that, yeah? 141 million Protestants. 1 million of those are the actual mainline, the PCUSA. The evangelical mainline is going to be smaller than that. Okay. This is a Google fight right here. This is awesome. Yes, Keith. 380,000. So that number, I can tell you, is without, we are the only church, I think, from our presbytery who has ever reported to the stated clerk. Thank you to our administrator and to our clerk. So Connor right now is presbytery clerk, and so he is shaking the bushes trying to get all these churches to get their statistical reports in. So I would say the number is probably over 400,000 in actuality. And it'll be interesting once we get to the 50th anniversary celebration and the numbers that are announced to see what's going on. All right? Any other general questions to talk about today that don't involve Google, maybe? Yeah, there were in the OPC, there have been a few anomalies over the years, but those are the outliers. Generally, you're right. Yeah. So just generally an understanding of the denomination versus local church and how we might even do things different than, say, Servant Church down in Barrio Logan or North City up in Poway. Why are those nuances different? Okay? Any other questions? Well, presbyteros is a Greek word which means overseer or elder. It's what has come to be known as elder, okay? So the Presbyterian form of government sees within Scripture there being multiple elders over local congregations, and then those elders working in concert in a region or larger area even, to provide help and oversight. We'll get to that in Acts 15. But some of us might be sick that day. So that year, thanks, Allison. There's nothing like a supportive administrator. I won't finish that line. All right, so that year, that decade. She's not wrong. Allison never tells me I'm right. She does tell me you're not wrong. So, we have a lot of fun in the office. It's almost my birthday, Jim. Don't forget. Yeah. So, so we see throughout Scripture there being multiple elders in local congregations, and some of those are ruling elders, and so they help oversee and shepherd. And then there are teaching elders as well, those, say, like Timothy, who had extra training and did extra study to open the word regularly. So it's not necessarily a Scottish word or an English word. It's a biblical word for the elders. So there's presbyter, there's bishop. And that's, you know, in how they oversee things. Presbyter in that representative form of government. Shepherd in how they care for the flock. There's numerous terms that apply to these men who serve in the church in this way. Yeah.
What is the celebration in Memphis? And are any Presbyterians or specifically ours doing it?
Yeah, this General Assembly, it's the 50th anniversary. And so there's a music concert while we're there. I don't know of any presbyteries specifically that are doing something. I know in our presbytery we're busy enough that I think the idea of putting on some joint effort besides a presbytery meeting is probably overwhelming for us. There are some special events to mark out that 50th anniversary. I will say for us, part of what we're doing is our stated clerk, Brian Chappell, will be here this fall for our Reformation Conference. And so that's exciting for Connor and I. He just came and spoke to our pastors and wives retreat. And he was very excited at the thought of coming back and being part of our Reformation Conference, especially as we open that up to other churches in our presbytery. So we're looking forward to that. And that will be a great opportunity to meet the closest thing to a functioning head of our denomination. We believe in plurality, so he's the clerk. So our top guy is a secretary, okay? So that's how we operate as Presbyterians. But we're looking forward to that. Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir. Very good. The question is, why does Connor have to do all four since I lived through a couple of the centuries? So, tough crowd. Wow. Brian will be teaching on Presbyterianism coming to America in the 17th century. So, right before he got his driver's license. So again, I think it's important, as Connor and I have gotten to know you all and our entire congregation, we think it's good for us to just take some time reestablishing our understanding of how we connect to the broader church. Because as Connor and I have gone to Presbytery and as we've gone to GA, it's amazing the stories we've heard about previous administrations and the lack of connection and the lack of involvement with those bodies. And we also don't want there to be any notion amongst us as a congregation, anything like, you know, we're the most reformed congregation in the presbytery. I can tell you every congregation thinks they're the most reformed congregation in any presbytery. We want to see how we fit and work with and interact with our brothers and sisters in our region and in our nation. So I'll remind you two exciting things that are happening. Connor announced them last Sunday. One is we brought in a pastor who's going to be preaching the first Mandarin-speaking PCA on the West Coast in Irvine. And the RPCNA actually has a Mandarin-speaking church in Irvine. But trust me, there are plenty of Mandarin speakers in Irvine to fill plenty of churches. So that's the hope, is to really evangelize and reach out there. And then we're also bringing on a gentleman into the presbytery who is going to be doing an RUFI, which is the Reformed University Fellowship Ministry, but strictly for international students. And so working with them, training them, as many of them end up going back to their home nations and being able to have them be discipled and trained. And that's also a good reminder of the vision to be reaching out and bringing in from San Diego State, because we have an international mission field that we can see from our parking lot. And we need to get serious about staffing and funding to really be able to do that type of ministry. Yes, Walker. Like for church planting and things like that? Right now, for Mission to the World, they have put out a request to PCA churches to give them 1%. They said, that's all we want, is 1% of your membership to become missionaries. I think 1% of budget to go to foreign missions. We're way over that here. because our mission giving is separate from our regular budget. I think we're actually, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're around 10%, aren't we? Mission giving to 15% maybe. So praise the Lord for that. That's awesome. So that's the campaign and the big ask right now for mission to the world is for churches to think in those numbers. And what they're doing by that, I know a lot of people get frustrated with, why do we have to word things certain? Why do we have to use higher ed and not just Sunday school? I'll tell you why we changed the name. Because whenever most people hear Sunday school, they go, oh, I know what to do with that. But you start calling it something different, and all of a sudden there's something different to confront, right? So it takes it longer for it to go into the circular file than it does another phrase that we're maybe familiar with. So, you know, if somebody's negative or down about that, you know, what Mission to the World is doing is simply reminding churches we should be praying for and looking for missionaries to go out from our midst. I mean, that's what was happening in Antioch. That's what should be happening today. I'm going to go with Lewis's and then Terry, and then I think there was a hand back here. Nope, I grew up in a dispensational prophecy conference, a Bible church that was a mile outside of a town of 85 people counting stray cats. And we were bulk mail permit number one. And I think after 30 years, I think there might be a number two out of that post office. In fact, the post office isn't even there anymore. I grew up in a rural church context, Bible church, that had come out, again, of a liberalizing church. The men from that church who stripped my dad of his credentials, told him he'd never preach again, all of that, that church is now closed. It's now an antique shop, and which is ironic on a number of levels. And my dad is going to be 85 in August, and he's still part-time discipleship director at his PCA church in Florida, where he's also a ruling elder. So he did not become Presbyterian until after he retired, after about 55 years of Bible church ministry. So, yeah, and so then as I went to Moody Bible Institute for undergrad, if you read all the paperwork when you were calling me, you'd know this. Just kidding. So I went to Moody Bible Institute for undergrad, and then I was in the Conservative Baptist Church before I went into seminary. I was in congregational churches primarily, and then into the RPCNA, and then now the PCA, which I interned in the PCA while I was in seminary, and so that's PCA was coming back to my first Reformed love. So, Terry? Okay. Well, that's something we could easily integrate into the course, because I would say the Great Commission is a huge part of what we do, both regionally in church planting and then mission works in foreign countries as well. So, yeah, we can definitely talk about that. Brian? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be talking about seminaries. Connor, I love to talk about seminaries. So that might be a three-week series just talking about Reformed seminaries. So, we'll definitely talk about our seminary, which is Covenant in St. Louis, as well as other Reformed seminaries that PCA ministers are trained in. Did we have another question back here? People were pointing at each other. People are volunteering other people for questions. So, yes, ma'am.
What kind of a church
Before I came here, I was in a Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America, which is a Scottish Presbyterian group. They've never been part of the American amalgamation of Presbyterianism. And so it's about, Canadian churches just split off. So it's maybe like 90 congregations across America and in Japan. They have a Japan Presbytery. And so their distinctives can be summarized by wine, women, and song. So wine, in that historically they were a teetotaler denomination, big in the Christian temperance movement, which was actually the Christian abstinence movement, but we won't talk about that. And then women, they are the only group in NAPARC that has ordained women as deacons. And that's because they were grandfathered in. That's over 100 years old that they've been practicing that. Song is they only sing the metrical psalms, like we sang this morning, and they only sing them a cappella. So that's why you might have heard from some people that if you called Joel Wood, you'd find the organ burning in the parking lot or something like that. Not the case. So I love Dave Coker. I love what he plays. I love that he won't call himself an organist. He says, I'm the organ player. So he just plays the organ like he plays piano. So, Dylan. Yeah, so just real quickly, and this is stuff that'll get into the water more as we move along. That's part of the desire of forming the home committee, is finding those more closely regional ways that we can work with other churches. So one example would be Chris Sandoval, a servant church that I mentioned earlier down in Barrio Logan. And they have lots of opportunities for people to come and volunteer and help. And so we're actually working on having him come and present and also preach to us probably at a quarterly evening meal and presenting that work. And the Bionhoffs were previously part of that congregation. And so there's a strong connection there. I would also see Eric, his last name's escaping me, but he's planting up in Oceanside. And so that might be something where we're able to have some folks go up and create some critical mass for them as they're seeking to start growing and get established. They're just like 3 weeks into public worship services there. Say again, Chappelle. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, he was baptized in this church. He's actually filling pulpit the Sunday we visited Incognito in 2021. So yes, Dylan, we are working on that type of thing. So just a reminder, in the Outward to 60 vision, that home committee, at New Life, we've always done really well, our ministry to ourselves, say, small groups and Christian ed and preaching and worship. We've always done foreign missions really well. But there's kind of a donut. I relate a lot of things to donuts. There's a kind of a donut around us that we've not really engaged and connected with. And so that's where the home committee is helping us with how to connect. And, how do we connect with mercy? That's the M in home. That's not like the diaconal mercy ministry. That's more of like, how do we connect with the San Diego Rescue Mission? Do they have volunteer or CAPS or things like this? To help provide people power for the ministries that they have going that service our community. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had a number of people involved with Pastor Juan in Escondido over the years. And we've finally seen that planted and established and all of that. Our parents of little kids are escaping, so we'll need to wrap up here. It is about time. One last question, anything? So hopefully by the end of this quarter, as we head into summer, we'll have lots of time, I know we will, to talk about these things. And so next Sunday, I'll make a note of some of the questions this week, and we'll be providing you opportunity to ask questions along the way so we know we're meeting that need and scratching that itch. Okay? All right. Thank you. And we will see you, Lord willing, tonight or next Sunday.